Welcome to Cowboys, Not Eggheads. Home of the brave, not home of the fearful. The world needs more cowboys and fewer eggheads. We're everywhere podcasts are found. So tell your fellow cowboys, and let's keep the conversation alive on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Remember to subscribe, rate, review, and share. And now, Cowboys, Not Eggheads, with Sam Fisher.
Well, 21 months after having Sheila Barden on, it's only fitting that I have the most interesting person I know back onto the podcast. And I do want to give you a quick shout of thanks, Sheila, for after I completed your podcast, I realized that I could actually do this because it was a kind of in-depth look at you, and I was a little bit nervous at the time, and I'm not nervous at all right now. So we're going to go a little deeper today, hopefully, and we're going to see the other side of the Sheila that social media doesn't see. We'll see if we can drill a little deeper. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Good. She's driving down Route 66, literally, and she's got, I mean, typical Sheila. She's like, I'm looking at her in a Zoom right now, and she's got like a car with like, literally can't even see out her back window. It's full of her suitcases and stuff. So
if you could see out my back window, though, there's a mountain bike back there.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay, yeah. I don't see it. I just see suitcases. So in the last update, 21 months ago, Sheila was into pickleball. She was taking tennis lessons. She was flying to exotic places and laying on tigers. She was talking about the pandemic. Thank God that's essentially what is over. And so since then, as far as I can tell, and she's going to tell us more, obviously, but she's got a grown-up job, which I would consider to be a grown-up job for Sheila. She works for a place called Endurolite. She's into mountain biking. We'll let her talk about those escapades. And so what am I missing? Am I missing anything else? What have you been up to in the last 21 months?
I have been up to so many things. I don't know. In there's a trip to Europe. There's a bunch of trips across the country. There's some crazy concerts. There's a lot of sports. There's as much of maybe an adult job as I'm ever going to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of. I mean, I get. I mean, I'm not trying to knock it, but I'm like, it's not a typical gig. I think of you. That's good. That's good. When I think of you, I think of the word gallivant, and I'm like, is that a negative word? So I looked up the word gallivant, and it's like to wander around seeking pleasure or diversion. Is that what you're doing right now? Are you gallivanting down Route 66?
Yes. Absolutely. I say that word all the time. I gallivant everywhere. Literally.
Okay.
The world. The whole world.
Gypsies tend to gallivant, so you're gallivanting. It hasn't stopped. Well,
true.
It's what allows you to gallivant? I mean, so tell us about the gig. Tell us about Endurolite. What's that all about?
Okay,
it's,
cool.
It's a supplement company. It's a protein company. It's a supplement company. The owner asks you to be what, like the product development director? What do you do? What are you up to these days?
So it's called Endurolite, but it's okay.
Oh, everybody, there you go.
Everybody Ooh. Calls it ah. when they first hear about it. They call it Endurolite, right? That's what it looks like. So it's the word endurance mixed with the word elite. So Endurolite is how you say it. And it's part of like the whole PR with the company right now is trying to figure out how to get people to say it correctly. It's probably never going to happen. And so not at
it's
all.
It's like the sign. You've never seen Seinfeld in your life, but I shouldn't say this. Your company people wouldn't like it, but it's like there's an episode of Seinfeld where they were converging companies as a water company, and it was they made it Moland, like, you know, mold, Moland Springs. Anyway, it was a big controversy because the name was all jacked up. But so I thought it was Endurolite. Then I read it today, and I said, oh, it's Endurolite. I'm wrong. It's Endurolite. All right. Endure, well, you spell like a cowboy. So my 2 cents for your people are L-E-E-T. That's how you say elite. Then I would say it right, but okay.
But elite, but you spell E-L-I-T-E, so...
I do, but I didn't, you know, most of us aren't elite. So anyway, I'll let your folks figure that out. But what do you do for EndureElite?
So if you look at my actual contract, I am the brand manager. I use that term super loose because words really mean nothing to me. But I truly am running a company. So Mark Glacier is the owner. I know. Sam's eyes just got real big because...
Yeah. No video yet.
Yeah. That is technically what I do. That's my title. I am not into words. Right? I really hate letters after my name, titles. That has never... Words don't mean anything to me.
You're a cowboy. You're not an egghead. Correct.
Yes. And so the first description line of the contract says face of EndureElite. So really, the only person who can tell me what to do and what not to do is the owner of the company. And that's Mark Glacier. Super awesome. He is the CEO, founder, creator, godfather of NutriBio. So NutriBio was started in 1996 with the idea of no compromise, full label disclosure. What he says is in the products is truly in the products. We have PhD chemists on staff. We have our own lab. We have our own GMP manufacturing facility. We're fully FDA regulated, which less than 1% of the supplement industry in the United States can say. So that's my parent company. And then inside of that, we have EndureElite. So EndureElite was created for endurance athletes, triathletes, marathoners, ultra marathoners, long distance bikers, century riders, and CrossFitters, like endurance CrossFitters, or I'm sorry, like people who just like to work out a lot, basically. And so my job currently is to go around the country, the world, and just spread the EndureElite love, knowledge, and just kind of help everybody gain awareness about what EndureElite is and what we do, which is super clean, lab tested supplements and nutrition for people who like to work out, but not in the sense of I want to lift heavy weights all the time. Like sometimes I do, for sure, but I'm not going in and trying to be a bodybuilder. I'm not going in and trying to be a power lifter. It's really for people, functional fitness. I want to go hike the Grand Canyon for 4 hours with my family. And, you know, I need to work out before I do that, during that, all that kind of stuff.
Basically, people like you. Pickleball one day, in your home gym the next, mountain biking, breaking things the next day, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, cool. Thanks for setting me up. I mean, I know what you do, but I didn't. It sounds like the perfect gallivanting kind of job for Sheila. I mean, it's a good fit, right?
It is 100% a good fit. To give you an idea, I have 178 nights in hotels here. That's just the hotels that I've booked. So sometimes, like my entire Europe trip, I didn't book any of those hotels. So I add up more than 178 nights in hotels this year. I don't know the exact amount, but it's a lot. I spend a lot of time on the road.
Well, in the year 2004, I was in a hotel room 180 nights, I believe. So I understand you're not home very much. I kind of wanted to examine today, Sheila, was some things that you've said in social media lately. So the title of this episode is The Lessons of Travel. So I'm just going to go through them one by one, and maybe you can just talk about them. And if you don't want to talk Sweet. About them, say, I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I will never take for granted how small I am in this universe. I think that's a great lesson of travel myself. Can you expand on that?
Absolutely. I have been super blessed my entire life to be able to travel. So even when I was young, my parents, they would take us even on short trips. So I grew up, and I talk about it frequently, that I grew up in a predominantly white Roman Catholic community, super small, about 15,000 people. The hardest like crime in the entire city was like marijuana use. There was no real crime. There weren't hard drugs. It was very like classic American white small town. And so I was super blessed that my parents are definitely gypsies as well, and didn't allow that to like kind of decide the fate of their four children. So I have a sister who lives in San Diego, a brother who lives in North Carolina. My youngest brother, he kind of followed me around the country for a while. He now lives in San Antonio, about 40 minutes from me. Or, well, I guess where I have a house, not really where I live anymore. And so I was super blessed to realize at a very young age how big the world is and how small we are. So when I am in San Antonio, I find myself living in a 15-minute bubble. Right? My grocery store is 15 minutes away. My favorite restaurant is 15 minutes away, or within 15 minutes. The gym I like to go to, the riding trails I like to go to, the tennis club, the pickleball court, my swimming pool, everything is within 15 minutes. And so if we live there all the time, I think we kind of get caught up in this is what everything is in the world. And it's not. So recently I was over in Switzerland and Holland, and I hung out with a lot of the locals in both places, but especially in the Netherlands. And there was probably a 2 or 3 hour period where they were so enamored with the idea of the United States. And oh my gosh. Tell me all about New York City. Like, we watch the show Friends. It has to be just like Friends. I'm like, okay, it's not at all like the show Friends. Or, you know, oh my gosh, tell me about Chicago, LA. They have this idea of what the United States is like. And I remember telling them at one point and looking them dead in the eyes. And it was a group of like 5 or 6 boys and boys. I say men, but boys. And I said, I just want you guys to understand and know that I grew up in the United States and I was brainwashed to think that America was the greatest nation in the entire world. I said, and we're not. And I don't mean that.
The hell we're not.
Yeah.
Right. Good controversy. Completely disagree.
A whole bunch of people are going to be really mad about that statement, and I'm totally okay with that. Because
okay, fine, fine. Which country is the greatest country on earth, then?
Whatever one you are currently in, I will argue that over and over and over again. I've been super blessed to be around the world, and every single country has its own culture, its own people. And if you are willing to embrace that and become part of that culture, whether you're there for a day, a week, or a month, that will become the greatest country that you've ever been to.
And well, have you been to Ukraine lately?
So unfortunately, yeah, no. Ukraine is clearly in a lot of trouble. right?
Yeah. And they're great people, by the way, Ukrainians. We have country. Well, I'd be careful because I've got listeners in 40. I thought it was 36. I counted today. We have listeners in 40 different countries right now. And Ukraine are good. They're great people. They are resilient people. I love them. But anyway, go ahead.
So I agree. Here's the thing. So you want to talk about Ukraine, right? We can also talk about how we've burned down St. Louis, how we've burned down Milwaukee, right? Like, we can talk about a lot of tragic things that have happened in the United States and not natural disasters, right? We have
it's part of our history.
Awesome,
yes,
parts of the United States, but when I'm over in Netherlands, they didn't know about the Uvalde shootings. Also, so somebody shot up an elementary school in Texas. Oh, that happened, but they don't hear that. All they see is Friends and
Hollywood.
Friday Night Lights,
yeah.
The show Friday Night Lights. They brought that up. Yeah. So in their head, they have this beautiful image, and I clearly love America, right? But we have our own faults. So I think that was that 3-hour conversation with the boys, it was a very vivid reminder how tiny of a speck each and every one of us is.
Yeah.
And how easy it is to get caught up into our little 15.
We're very. Well, I just went to Ireland. I hadn't been abroad for a while, and I went to Ireland, and to me, the message is we're insignificant. I mean, in a way, we're very insignificant. I mean, you know, when I'm standing at a castle where somebody had their head freaking chopped off 400 years ago, and like, I'm important? I don't think so. I mean, you know, it's called perspective. That's what it gives you.
So I just think it's that good reminder that the more you travel, the more you realize how insignificant you really are, and how do you change that? How do you leave a legacy? How do you go from being mediocre to making a change that is lasting in the universe? Is it through travel? Is it through podcasts?
No, I agree with you. I don't know. I don't know. I guess my way is a podcast. I don't know. And I don't even know what I'm doing with this podcast, but here we are. This is, you know, I just did published my 51st episode today. It's like, wow. But yeah, we all got to do it. We're all trying to find our way home, basically. That's where I'm. That's where this whole, that is. Yeah. So that's what we'll talk about that here in a little bit.
I had a,
go ahead.
The day that I don't know if you're going to ask about this, we'll talk about it or whatever, but the day that I dislocated my elbow and ended up in the emergency room, I got a text message the very next morning, and it was from a friend who said, hey, just, you know, checking in on you. How is everything? I said, you know, it's been better. It's been worse, but I'll survive. And I didn't realize how important the words I'll survive were until he texted back, have you heard about our friend Steve? I said, no, what's up? And right about the same time that I went down on my mountain bike on Friday, our friend Steve, very healthy doctor, passed away of a heart attack while on a run, out running to better himself. Passed away on a heart attack.
Yeah.
Right? And so we're worried about, you know, these insignificant things. And I could die, like I could have a heart attack right now.
Yeah, so could I, but there we are. Yes, that's true. That's why you've gotta make every inch of your life count. And so yeah, that's, I mean, for you it's doing what you're doing, basically.
Yeah.
Going out and getting the most out of it. Okay. Travel has, there's another statement you said. Travel has taught me happiness and heartbreak. What does that mean?
I think that It means, just like I kind of said a few minutes ago, I am willing to embrace the people and the culture in every single country that I go to. So that brings me pure happiness, right? To be fully immersed into a culture that I have never experienced before. And the moment that I have to get on that plane or in that car or on that boat and leave, it is pure heartbreak. And so it's that moment of realization that you can't be there forever. You can't be at every place in the world forever. And so leaving little pieces of me behind, and then in place of the parts that I leave behind, hoping to fill them with pieces that I take with me. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. It's great. It's really interesting to know these. This is the way you look at things, because a lot of people don't. They don't get you. So this, I like this. The other thing that travel has taught Sheila, how to value my tribe when I leave them behind, which you basically just kind of, basically, you just answered it, right? I mean.
Yeah, I am a very much so an extroverted introvert. So I can attach to people very quickly, and I do. And I think some people would think that's a major fault, right? I can fall in love with someone very quickly. I can love them for being authentic. I can love them for being true. I can love them for welcoming me with open arms. And I can, I guess that's another piece of the heartbreak. Like, I can live somewhere for a very short amount of time and feel so connected to that family, to my friends, to that person. And I can love them for that forever and maybe never see them ever again in my entire life, but value that short amount of time that I had with them.
Okay. That's unique. That's
unique. It is unique. It is.
It's unique. Most people don't relate to that, but I mean, it's unique.
I don't at all.
Travel has taught Sheila to appreciate small acts of kindness, and it's taught her to let go of the things that no longer bring her joy, which we kind of touched on the last podcast in a way, I think. You want to expand on that?
I don't remember talking about it in the last podcast. I'll be honest. I mean, my brain is in so many different places at all times that
it's a hoarder's house, as you said. You described it as a hoarder's house.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's a mess in there. So remind me of what I said.
You said it taught me to appreciate small acts of kindness, and it's taught me to let go of things that no longer bring me joy.
So I think the small acts of kindness are kind of self-explanatory. When somebody, when I was in Switzerland, right, and it started to rain and somebody offered me an umbrella. A local was like, oh, clearly this girl has no idea what she got herself into. Those types of small acts of kindness. Or when I was in Netherlands and I knew somebody for like a day and a half and they were like, come have dinner with my family. Right? Those kind of small acts of kindness where I don't have to have dinner in a restaurant by myself. So you learn to really appreciate people's willingness and openness to embrace you as a person, as a human, kind of as like a lost soul who's just trying to find the answer to the universe that is clearly not 42. And if anybody, I don't watch movies, But I know that that is from Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay, so thank you acknowledging that I know some type of movie reference.
Yeah, congratulations. I'm shocked. I don't even know it. So now
what
I'm curious. I don't even know that one, so I'll have to go check it out. Oh, man.
Okay. Somebody told me that once. So.
Okay.
And then just letting go of things that no longer bring me joy. So at one point I ate, drank, slept. My entire world, my entire life revolved around CrossFit training, competing, CrossFit. And then after my second back surgery, I realized that CrossFit no longer brought me joy. And more specifically, competing in CrossFit no longer brought me joy. And so I just stopped. One day I stopped training for time. I don't know when it happened. I can't pinpoint the day. I can't pinpoint what went through my brain. But I know that I stopped training for time. I stopped training to be the best in the world because it no longer brought me joy.
Well, yeah, right? Several back surgeries and shoulder surgeries, maybe that was it. That would be it for me, but hey, I don't...
It wasn't, and that's the thing. It wasn't the surgeries. I don't know what it was, but...
You let it go.
I let it go, yeah.
And however, you were in a CrossFit gym today. I saw you. You were in a CrossFit gym today.
So, I still work out in a CrossFit style or at a CrossFit gym 3 to 4 days a week.
But just for fitness, just to keep moving.
I can no longer care about what my score is because I know how addictive of a personality I have and how easy it is for me to spiral into that competitive mindset again. So I can't consciously be thinking of my score, my time, how fast I'm going. Am I beating anyone else in class? So the moment that they ask for my score, I have to knock it off, like, because I will get addicted again. I know I'm addicted to the endorphins. I'm addicted to the adrenaline. I'm addicted to the blackout feeling of competing. And so I have to then explain every time that I walk into a new CrossFit gym why my score is a smiley face. Because I'm here for a good time and not a long
time. I'm proud of you. I think that that's growth myself. So good for you. I think that's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. You recently posted, "Don't ask me to stay because I'll always leave silently without a hurrah, and I can't promise that I'll be back," which we just talked about a little bit. So my question as a follow-up is, what are you running from, Sheila?
You know, that's a great question. That is such a great question. I think, honestly, I am running from mediocrity. I'm running from being stagnant. I'm running from being stuck.
Running to something? Are you running to something?
Yeah, maybe I'm running to the next adrenaline high, the next endorphin dump. I'm running to the next culture, the next experience, the next story, the next adventure. I don't know if it's so much that I'm running from anything or that I'm running to something.
Well, I'm just running. Forrest Gump again, a little Forrest Gump parallels, because that the question actually came from Forrest Gump, which we mentioned the last time, because there's a scene, and it's one of the few movies you have seen. There's a scene where she says, or somebody's like, "Hey, we want to go to San Francisco?" "Well, yeah, far out, here we go." There's another scene where Jenny, you know, it just been with Forrest. It was Forrest's greatest day, and out the door she goes. And the cab driver asks, "What are you running from?" And I swear to God, I think about you sometimes in that scene. So, and your answer, we'll get to that in a second, because I was laughing for a specific reason. I'll tell you in a second why that was. Okay. I can't believe I can talk to you like this. I'm being as straightforward as possible, and you know that I'm a straightforward person. So there we go.
Oh yeah.
All right.
I like it because, I mean, it's a good question, right? Because I don't know the answer.
It's honest. Thank you. I didn't think you'd lie to me. Okay, this isn't the itinerary I envision in my head, and as I try to see the world before I die, but it absolutely is the journey my tiny soul needed. Now, first of all, I think you have a huge soul, but okay. What do you mean by that?
I think that even as a child or maybe early adulthood, I still had the picture perfect life vision in my head. Like what everyone thinks the American dream is supposed to look like. And I think I still believed that I needed the title after my name. I still needed everybody's approval. And I don't know when that switched exactly, because even as a child, right, I didn't care to fit in, but I still knew what the American dream looked like. I still knew what this quote unquote ideal life looked like, what the keeping up with the Joneses meant. I understood all of that. I never wanted to be exactly like that, but I thought that I had to be like that. And so I don't know when that switched, when it went from white to black for me, but there's no gray zone for me. Right. There's no it went very white, like this is your perfect ideal life, to very black, like, yo, I can't, I don't fit in anywhere in this world. I don't fit into a box. I don't fit into a hole. I don't fit into an octagon. I created some weird ass shape that I am now like constantly evolving and moving around, or maybe it's moving around me, or I don't really know. But it pulls me in all kinds of weird directions all the time. And yeah, it's not.
Again, you're leading me back to my punchline here. Your answers are very, I'll tell you in a second.
Very Sheila.
Okay. They're more than that. There's three questions I'm going to ask that will ultimately get me to my conclusion. Okay. Can you find peace, Sheila, without going to war with yourself?
No. I can't. I think lots of people can, probably. But I am definitely at constant war between what I think the world and the universe wants from me and what I know I can give the universe. If that makes sense.
Ah, interesting. It's a different take than what I thought you had said.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I am definitely at constant war with what I think the universe and the world wants from me and what I want to give the universe, or what I think the universe or people around me need.
Right. So you truly can't find peace until you go to war.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
I mean, no. That's okay. Okay, you passed the first question. The second, well, not passed, but you're still leading me down this direction. Are failures the greatest gifts of life?
Only if you learn from them. Failures are only the greatest gifts in life.
Of course,
if you are willing to learn from them. So, if you
yes,
the classic definition of Idiocracy. If you make the same mistake 10 times, or you do the same thing 10 times and you don't learn from it, then, and you didn't learn from your failure, then no. For me,
that's insanity.
Okay, but insanity, not idiocracy. Insanity, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, failure is the only thing that has led me to this exact moment.
Yep. Okay, you're 2 out of 2 on your little test. 3. I'm not sure where I'm going with this, but well, I do know where I'm going with it. But a lot of, and it's a theme that I'm searching about myself this season, since this is my therapy, the podcast. A lot of people think that I'm stoic, et cetera, and I'm serious. And a lot of people can never figure out why I don't smile for photos, because the simple answer is I'm a terrible poker player. I'm serious, but I am not going to hide behind a smile. Does Sheila ever hide behind a smile?
Yes. Yeah.
You do.
I absolutely okay. Hide behind a smile. Yeah, not.
Would you rather not, or is just the way it's something you intentionally do?
Oh, it's a tricky question. I don't hide behind a smile.
Yes, it is.
So, I don't hide behind a smile frequently, right?
Yeah.
It is not my go-to, and it's not something that I do consciously. I would say that the times that I hide behind a smile are when I'm trying to protect those around me. So I don't hide behind a smile to protect myself by any means, but I will hide behind a smile to protect the people that I love, that I care about, that I hold close to my heart. Does that make sense?
Okay. Does that make sense? Yeah, sort of, yeah. So the reason I ask you the last three questions is because those are three key points. Like, you've got to meet David Goggins, dude, because you've got to, it's just like, we talked about this last time, and you still haven't read his book, and I wish you would get his audiobook because I just finished it, and it's like talking to Sheila, only it's like talking to Sheila. So I think that you would find it fascinating. You agree with, like, everything that he says. And it's just, I know, and I'm not asking you to listen to it because it's motivational. I think you would find it fascinating. Because there aren't very many people like David Goggins and Sheila Barden. There just aren't. And you're fascinating. So it's my second plug. Will you freaking just listen to the freaking audiobook? Just do
the
it. Go ahead.
Sam, I would like, I don't lie. I've never.
It won't bore you. I guarantee to you, it will not bore you.
I've never made it through a motivational book, a self-help book. I don't even think I've made it 2 pages into any of that kind of stuff.
But it's,
all my motivation is intrinsic.
I know. I know. But wouldn't it be cool to read somebody else who thinks like you do, so you won't feel so weird? How's
no,
that?
No, because I like being a weirdo.
Okay. All right.
Okay. People are constantly searching for other people like that. They want to fit in. They want to find other people that look like them, that act like them, that talk like them. My favorite people in the whole world, and the people that I tend to get along with the best, are people that are the exact opposite of me. The exact opposite.
Well, that would explain why you and I are on the freaking line.
Exactly,
here, right?
Because politics is like the exact opposite. I don't like it. I don't want to think about it. I want to.
Well, I'm out of politics, kid. I'm out of it, but.
I have a friend who's gone to prison 2 times, right? And has made some terrible life decisions. And he's one of my favorite people in the entire world. Because he's learned from his bad life choices, right? And he is the exact opposite of me. Right? While I skirt the lines of rules frequently, right? I know smart enough that if a bar fight starts, I'm going to walk the other way and not break a bottle and stab somebody. Right? Like, so I.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, not, the best.
Not great life choices. Right? Like, not real great life choices. And so I'm attracted to people that aren't like me. And I just, other people, I don't know, like, the idea of...
Well, I'm going to kid... Someday I'll kidnap you, and I'm going to force you to listen to it. So screw
fair,
you.
That's fair.
All right, here is a question that I asked another guest of ours last week, and I stumped this person. I think I stumped her. But the question is, could Sam be a CrossFit coach?
I have not seen you try to coach anyone in several years. My gut says, yes, that you could, because you have an analytical brain. So you can break things down. CrossFit coaches have to be able to take high-level physics and anatomy and body movement and dumb it down to a kindergarten level. So can you dumb things down enough and say, you know, you might know all of the human anatomy, but can you just teach someone to balance their foot? Right? Yeah, I think you could.
Fascinating answer. That wasn't the answer I got from the other person, but fascinating. Yeah, so I'm an egghead. Thanks.
Sorry.
Interesting. Okay, another kind of a question I've been asking this season is, do you, Sheila Barden, do you feel, do you think, or do you know?
Okay, interesting question.
I think
because
so.
If you listen to people talk, they will tell you this answer. When I talk, I say all three of those things. I think that we should do this. I rarely say, I feel like we should do this. So I'm not a real feely person.
Who do you say that to? Who do you say that to? Because I don't relate to the feel bullshit at all. If somebody says, I feel like we should look at it this way, well, I think you're an idiot. But, I mean, I don't feel anything.
Feel,
but who do you say that to?
Because
you have to communicate that way to some people.
And it's usually to people who I know are a little bit more sensitive. Like, more like, if you are empathic, if I know that you are a very empathic person, and that's just an energy you give off, I will use the word feel.
What was the word you just used that I never heard of?
Empathic?
What?
Like empathy. If you're an empathic person.
Oh,
if you're...
Okay, empathic. I thought it was empathetic. Empathetic.
Yeah,
empathic.
So empathetic is a thing. Gotcha. But if you're an empathic person, like you're just like, you show a lot of empathy, right? Then you're a feeler. And I know that in order for me to relate to you, to get my point across to you, I need to use the word feel.
Okay. But what do you personally do? Do you think or do you know?
I'm a thinker. Yep. Yep. 80% of the time, I'm a thinker. I will only use the word no when I know. Right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to use the word no if I haven't experienced it myself or if I don't have firsthand experience with it. I'm not going to use that word.
Well, the older you get, the more you use it.
That's
fair. I've got about, I don't know how many years on you, but I mean, yeah.
I use the word, I think, a lot. I think that we should do this. I think that this is the best solution.
I do too.
I think that whatever. And again, I will only use the word.
Yeah.
I know that Sedona is beautiful. Right? I've been to Sedona. Yeah. I think that the Swiss Alps are beautiful. I've never seen them. But I think in pictures they're pretty freaking beautiful. But I've never seen them with my own eyes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's just an interesting little question of the season that I've been saying. So, my last question is, There's a Blackberry Smoke song that I posted the other day, and I actually thought of you, And the line is, the line of the song is, they say that you want to go to know that you want to come home, which I think that's very profound. I mean, I assume you agree with that statement or understand it.
Understand.
Oh, you don't understand it.
I understand that statement. I understand it.
Okay.
I cannot relate to that statement.
Yet.
What?
Yet, but you will someday. What? You can't relate to that statement yet, but you will someday. I know that you, I think that you will. I it's just like, you know, it'll be a different season.
Possibly.
Oh, she's shaking her finger at
maybe.
Me.
Maybe.
Shaking her finger at me.
Pointing at the windmills that were off in the distance. Like, there's my windmills.
I'm sorry, yeah, I can't see them.
In the distance, the big windmills are out there. Everywhere feels like home to me. And people don't relate to
that. You are a gypsy. I mean, that. Okay, so a home is not a physical place for you, I guess. But this question that I'm about to ask, I want you to define home as your physical location where your dogs are and your, you know, the place that I went to. So what's your favorite part of being at that physical structure called home? And you can't say family, you can't say dogs. What's the favorite part of that physical structure or of that place called home?
Wait, so you want me to think there. Of home as a physical structure. You don't like
for now, you know, that place in San Antonio where you got a lot of your stuff and your dogs and stuff.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about that place?
Just said
but you can't
yeah,
say
you just
dogs.
Said I can't say dogs. So,
right. I'm forcing you to think or feel or know.
That is a very hard question for me because my house could burn down today.
Yeah.
And as long as the dogs made it out okay, I don't need anything there. Nothing, no physical object brings me that joy.
I mean, that's fascinating.
Everything that is material that is at that house right now, I can replace.
Yes. Yes.
I can replace everything.
That's true.
So,
I mean, if your home gets hit by a hurricane or tornado or whatever, you would, big deal.
It's not.
I mean, and that's fascinating. I appreciate your candor, by the way. I really appreciate your candor. That's why you're a guest, because you are freaking. You don't bullshit anybody. That's truly how you feel.
That's how you feel.
And that's how you think. And that's then you damn near know it at this point.
That is one of the things that in my life I might truly know right now is that if I went home to San Antonio Sunday night and the house was not there, and it was just an empty lot. Okay, so be it. If the dogs made it out safe, so be it. Fine.
Fine. I knew that dog disclaimer would. Make
that's
you
really
big.
The. And there's not one material thing on this earth, that I am attached to. Nothing.
Oh, I'm not either. I mean, well.
But what's your answer to the question?
Oh, what's my answer? Oh, we're going to flip the tables here. Well, honestly, my office down here, my little den, I really like it down here. It's my little podcast studio. I'm surrounded by past things of my life. And I'm in this really comfortable chair right now, and I'm looking out the window and watching a cat and our black squirrel. And, to me, it's a comfortable place that's mine. But you're right. You could have this wherever you are. And when Heather and I lived in Pennsylvania, home was there. You know, so it's wherever you're at. That's where home is. And so maybe that's the greatest lesson of travel.
Maybe that home is everywhere. Home is the people. Home is... Netherlands felt like home when I was there. I could live in in Holland and be happy. I could live in Switzerland and be happy. I could live in Thailand and be happy. I could live in the Cayman Islands. I could live in Barbados. I could live in Honduras and be happy. And for me, it's as long as I'm willing to embrace the people and the culture, that's home.